So before I go on and add a few more things, is there any questions about any of that so far? You know, where we are so far, or where, or you're, where you are in your own experience? Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting, yeah. I mean, one thing to say about that straight away is, you know, I try to in the book, I don't know whether you've noticed, but each one chapter is more thinking of it in terms of a path, one thing and then another. And then the other chapter is more of a mandala, which is developing them all. Neither of them quite get it, actually, but you don't leave, in a genuine path, you don't leave one stage behind to go on to the next.
You
accrete, that's right. And probably you'll find that at certain times what's needed is more integration, sometimes what's needed more emotional positivity. They're not actually literally distinct, because when you act more positively, you become more integrated. Like if you're doing your things that you've been grateful for, what you'll start to notice is you'll start to notice feeling gratitude when you feel it more in the moment, and you'll start to actually just notice more things you feel grateful for, because you've started to tune yourself to those things you feel grateful for rather than those things that irritate you. I mean, human minds, remember, they're evolved to protect themselves. So what that means is that you'll tend to notice negative experience more, because we'd evolved to notice things that threaten us. You know, quite naturally, our main thing is to stay alive. So anything that threatens us, including anything that threatens our social sense, because we are, after all, a kind of pack animal, anything that threatens our social sense will show up to us very much. Literally, we'll notice it more. But you see how that's got those inbuilt dangers in it. If you're not careful, you keep on noticing negative things that are showing up to you. Yeah. So it's really important to consciously notice things you feel grateful for, because they won't naturally show up as much. Yeah. And if you do that, you'll become more integrated. So in a way, you could think of the whole path in terms of integration, deepening that more and more, or the whole path in terms of emotional positivity, deepening that more and more. They're not literally distinct. They're only distinct for exegesis, I think is the word. They're not... I've been wanting to get that in somewhere. It's not every day you get the chance for a Latinate word like exegesis for explaining it, it's basically. It just means for laying it out in front of you, explaining it all. So it's distinct like that, but it's not distinct in experience. Nothing is, actually.
I'm planning to do the life story within the next
week. Oh, yes.
And I wondered if you could tell me what it's for.
I have no idea. What it's
for,
yeah. Do you know? I don't know. I should do. I've done it. Well, what it's for might not be the right question. What it does, I think, is... give you a deepened sense of what your life has been and is, and therefore who you are. All things arise in dependence on conditions is what we'll be starting to explore more and more as we go into the course. And what you call me arises on dependence on all sorts of conditions. Your parents' conditions, the historical conditions you grew up in, the country you grew up in, it has a huge effect on the kind of creature you think of yourself. Integration means, I think, taking rich ownership of all that, which partly means feeling it, I think. It's quite difficult to quite say what it is. My experience doing it is I feel like I've owned up to myself more. If you think of somebody who doesn't ever tell certain things, I mean, if you think of the opposite, somebody who's got secrets, perhaps we've all got little secrets. But if you thought of having large secrets, you can imagine how they would stop you connecting with people. Gradually, you wouldn't be able to become integrated. So the more that you're trying to move towards this sense of shared life with people, I think the more integrated you become. I mean, some people in the team have been doing it, and they've been saying it's been really strong. I want to come on to the next thing I want to do in that context, because it can be a bit of a shock when you actually tell your life story. I mean, frankly, when I tell mine, even now, I can be left with thinking, I don't like my life. You know, actually, I've got a wonderful life, but there are quite large parts of it I really don't like. And, you know, when I tell that story, I don't like to tell it. I'd rather tell a much more cheerful story than the story I've got. I mean, it's not actually that bad even. It's just a bit sort of... Anyway, never mind. but it leaves me with that sense of, oh, crumbs. It might even be a stronger word than crumbs. I can't think of a stronger word than crumbs, but anyway, you know what I mean. But it... because I'm so angelic. But it leaves you with a sort of sobriety, a sort of, oh gosh, that's who I am, that's what my life has been. And integration feels like that, a rich sort of sense of self-ownership, not the best word, but that this is my life. There's a lovely poem later on in the book by James Fenton where he says, it basically is about that, this is my life, this is what I've done. This is who I am. And integration means being able to really just, this is what my life has been, without feeling ashamed of it neurotically, without feeling at variance with it, as a sort of coming to terms with it, I think. But you have to be a bit careful telling it, because some people veer towards the negative. Some people instinctively want to paper over the negative. What you're trying to get to is here's what it is. Just as Cezanne tried to paint his wife, he didn't try and paint her whether he loved her or not. He just tried to say, here she is. This is her. This is me painting her. And that's all he tried to do, and that's why they're so great. You're trying to paint your life like that. Here it is. And that gives you this sense of sober richness, I experience anyway. Well, if it's a sober life. I don't want to suggest that everybody's here, but probably you have all been much happier than me. But, there we go. Yeah.
I was discussing a couple of weeks ago with somebody else about this life story idea. And we both realised that it would be easier to tell the life story to complete strangers.
Yes, interesting.
Friends, even perhaps, who we trust.
Yes, that's right.
Because there is the self that we portray to our friends, even unconsciously.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
And lots of stuff comes out that could shock them or surprise them.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
And that can change our relationships, even if we trust them.
Indeed, yeah.
To respect that we're...
Yes, that's right. It's interesting, because I was thinking of actually getting people to do it in the class, but I didn't want to... I felt like suddenly a bit encounterish and didn't want to do that anyway.
So, what was your advice there? Do you think it's worth telling somebody who's not actually a close friend?
I mean, I think there is. But I think, again, you need... I mean, somebody was challenging me the other day on one of the nights where you seem to be saying, you need to be a Buddhist, you need to come here. And that looks invidious, it looks like I'm just saying you need to sort of be a member of the Labour Party, effectively. Really, really important to change the world. Lots of people are suffering. How about you vote for me, is what it starts to sound like. But what I meant by it is that, do you see how you need people of goodwill? You need people who are wanting to be honest themselves, who see the value of that, who applaud honesty, not decry it, who aren't too hung up on status and appearance, and all those sort of things, which we all get foolishly hung up on. But you see what I mean? You need to do it with a group of people who understand what you're trying to do. Otherwise, it can be quite difficult. Otherwise, it's very difficult to handle other people being shocked. I remember telling my, somebody once told me their life story. I'm not usually shocked by anything, but I was actually terribly shocked. And I, you know, managed to control my face, but as you have to learn to. But if I was to do it with people who just didn't understand what I'm trying to do, I don't think I would advise that. That's a judgment call for you, isn't it? Are these friends of mine really interested in me? Or do they just like me to be the guy who tells jokes, or the guy who gets things fixed, or the woman who is charming and always good, you know, friendly? Are these friends of mine, or are they friends of a particular bit of me? I mean, the other thing that shows up, I think, is that our disintegration often shows up in the fact that we have different species of friends. One group that we're sweary and duh, with, another group, possibly here, where we're all very Buddhist-y and spiritual with. I'm not suggesting you get all sweary here, I'm just suggesting that it says something about ourselves. What I notice now is I'm pretty much the same person, whether I'm in a room of, I mean, this is actually pretty much me. Not even very cleaned up, a bit cleaned up, but not very cleaned up. You know, so what you're looking for is to be the same kind of person everywhere you are. Because that's a sign of integration. It's, I mean, you're not putting on a show. You are responsible for other people. You're not inflicting your bad moods on them. That's a different thing altogether. But our disintegration is often shown up by the fact that we're different people for different people. And sometimes people are nervous, aren't they, then their birthday party to bring them all together. And it's because they know different people. And all those different people happen to be you, and it's a bit nerve-wracking. Will you manage it? Darling! Oh my God. I had this friend who was like terribly blokey, and he was in the theatre world, but terribly blokey and a bit sort of stiff. And then I went to the theatre with him, and people were like, darling! You're thinking, I've never seen that before! I mean, it was incredible. Anyway, that's a whole other story. Long answer to your question. I'll try and keep it shorter next time.
Sorry, following on from that, if you're trying to be more integrated and positive emotion and stuff like that, and then you sort of realise that there are aspects of your life that don't support that.
Yes.
Like, for example, your work environment.
Yeah.
How do you manage that? Because sometimes then it makes you sort of, you're trying to do all of this, but then it feels like everybody else is working against you.
Yes,
doing it, and then trying to stay integrated without sort of feeling exposed and quite raw is quite difficult. Because it'd be nice to give up my job, but I can't just...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was my first suggestion, is give up the job. I mean, that's what I did. Although I didn't really have a job, but anyway, I gave it up. It's a judgment call thing again, isn't it? Some people do eventually find, look, I can't do the things I value in this context. I just can't do it. My experience generally is whatever world you go to, there's always some people who are of goodwill. And I mean, often jobs are actually the people you work with, aren't they? It's not so much the job itself. It's nearly every job I've done. Not that I've how many have I done? I did a paper round. that's about it. Anyway, I was a nurse for a while. When I used to be a nurse going from different wards, there was always one or two people I could sort of get on with. But you see how you need to change, that's why changing yourself is always a matter of also trying to change the world. You can't do one without the other. That's a massive matter. And that's what we're trying to do here at the Buddhist Centre, is change a bit of the world at least. Actually, you eventually need the whole world to be, okay, let's do life stories. Let's meditate, let's do stuff. But that's quite a big project. But we're starting small. But yeah, I think sometimes it does, for some people it does become, I need to change my lifestyle. If you carry on meditating, if you carry on this journey, it will start to ask questions of your lifestyle generally, yes. So if you don't want to ask those questions, probably don't keep coming. is my sound advice to you. I mean, as you become more aware, you become more aware. And so things that mitigate against that, militate against that, will show up more, etc., etc. Anyway, well, that answers your question in a way.
You've just got to stay with it, I guess.
Yes, I think trying to...
Work, you've just got to stay
think if you decide that actually this is where I am going to work, then where can I make it more positive? Most situations are much more affectable than we think. Our actions do change other people very quickly. There've been studies, haven't they? If you're in a positive, generous state, it affects people, two people from you, not just the person you're in contact with, not just the person they're in contact with, but the person they're in contact with. So that suggests that people are much more affectable than we think. So I think just making tea and getting the donuts at work actually can have a bit of effect. It's a tiny thing, but probably a bit more than we assume. So don't assume that people are just unregenerate. Often all people need is a context in which they can tell the truth. I remember that feeling with Princess Di, though you remember her. I just thought she's got no context in which she can tell the truth. So no wonder things get pear-shaped. It's mean, but mostly just people need a human context in which they can start to speak. They don't know that otherwise. Most people are just like us. And that's the other thing I think you discover in integration, is that we're all pretty much the same. We're all very much in the same boat. Once you start to tell the truth, we're all pretty much in the same boat. And that's the boat of being human. And that's what we're trying to develop, not some weird sort of spiritually thing that's different from that, but that's what we're trying to develop. Look, I better press on to what I was going to say, not that I have got much more to add, because most of it is really to do with you doing things, me doing things. Positive emotion isn't a theory, it's something we need to do. But one way we could do it, those of you who have done life stories, what you might do is you might then say, let's meet, after we've done those life stories, let's meet again, and what we're going to do is rejoice in merits. This is a classic Buddhist practice, and it's a very, very good thing to do in this stage for positive emotion. And all you do in rejoice in merits, I've written about it in the book, is you just go around in a group and you say what you like about each other. You just rejoice in the good things. It doesn't mean to say you don't have your criticism, it doesn't mean to say you don't... Blah, blah, blah. You just decide, just as you decide to be grateful for things, notice what you're grateful for, you just decide to rejoice in things, in the good things. I mean, I often do, in our community that I live in above the centre, every time we have a birthday, we rejoice in the merits of the person having a birthday. We just go around and say, what we love, like, admire about the person. Remember Ollie, for instance, Ollie and Benji, wasn't it? We went round and rejoiced in them. And Ollie looked, moved by the end. And I remember Benji saying it was one of the best birthdays he's ever had. Again, it's just a context. You see, when it's a birthday, that's really what's required, is that you rejoice in that person. But nobody knows that's an option. So you get drunk instead and then say something nice about them. That other side of that alcohol wall. So that's something you might do in this stage, is create a session of rejoicing in merits. Or you just might rejoice a bit more. You could rejoice in people. Just actually say it's really good the way you did that. If you're like me, you'll have a very critical mind. I'm very critically minded. And I have to keep on remembering to rejoice and see the good, because I've got a critical mind. So see if you can just, in the next week, find opportunities to say that was good, what you did there was good. But try and make it really specific as possible. You're really good at that. I really appreciated that you did that. That's very, those very simple human virtues. See if you can actually rejoice in somebody. Don't do it too self-consciously, otherwise they feel that you're practicing on them. What's going on? I just wanted to rejoice in you. Yeah? It is a bit like weird. Try and do it naturally. Anyway, that's a really good thing to do, a really good thing to do. So that's one thing you might do this coming week. Another area I wanted to emphasise, which I've written about in the book, is this, what I've called, not perhaps very well, the discipline of delight. So part of positive emotion is making a simpler way of putting it is making sure you safeguard the sources of your inspiration. Again, this is a much more important matter than we think. We easily tend to want to preference jobs and work and doing our to-do list, or worrying about our problems, or criticising somebody in our mind. Actually, one of the things we really need to do is keep safeguarding the sources of inspiration, the things in our life that make life feel worth living, make life feel valuable, intrinsically valuable. Yeah. Again, it's one of those things that you can just forget to do. Like just the other day, I went with Parambandu to see the Giorgione exhibition. I used to go to exhibitions a lot. I'm a bit of an arty person. And I haven't been for ages, and I really enjoyed it. I just forgot how much value I get from looking at paintings. At first I'm a bit bored, and it's a bit like, what am I doing here, and I want to go to the cafe. But then as I get over that bump, you know, gradually looking at the paintings, I forget that, oh God, they really inspire me, nourish me. Yeah. But, you know, in a full life, that starts to sort of drop off the edge of your life. Or when was the last evening you read a novel, a really good novel? You know, that lovely sense of being really nourished by it and inspired by it. Or the last time you went for a long walk in the countryside without your iPlayer, what are they called? I've distracted myself now. You see what I mean? So see if you can do something this week that safeguards those sources of inspiration. If inspiration is too romantic a word, those sources of what I mean by that, I mean non-toxic enjoyment. Those kind of enjoyments are innocent, you know, like reading a novel, like going for a walk in the countryside, like actually spending a bit longer with a friend and talking, like going to see a really good film. One of the books might be this one. No, the last one. I was talking about going to see Boyhood, that film Boyhood. And I was just so struck by it. I went to see it twice. And the second time, I could relax. I was really struck by it because, you know, that scene where, you know, the film, they're throwing these kind of sharp things. It's so worrying because you've watched this boy grow up from being a child to a teenager. And you feel much more... It's a very good example of positive emotion that if you could but see that with all of us, see us grow up, you'd feel this great sense of love for them because you've actually, it's a miracle that they've managed to get to be grown up. I was really struck by that in the film, that you're much more bothered because you actually have seen somebody grow up. Yeah. And I found it very enriching because not only was it a good film, it also said something about what I was trying to do with my life, which was feel that sort of feeling for people more, you know, that kind of love, concern for people more. That's surely one of the things we most want from our life. When we die, no one will say he managed to be, you know, sceptical and critical all of his life and that was a really good thing. Nobody gives a monkeys about that sort of thing. What they'll want to say is that they were just really lovely and they were good to be with and they were really appreciative, and it's all those simple human things that will matter. But those things we easily forget, yeah? So see if you can do something this week that safeguards your source of inspiration, you know, whatever it is, and actually give quality time to it. Usually, I mean, this is one of the values of the arts, of culture, usually that they just squeeze in the edges of time. Give, if you can, proper time to it. And sometimes that might mean that you know, like if it's a weekend, you need to sleep for longer, you need to hang out and do nothing a bit more, so that you're in a state of mind where you can enjoy a novel or reading a poem or going to see the Cezannes at the Courtauld or whatever it is. Because if you've not got a quality mind, you can't have a quality experience. You're just ticking it off your list. Yeah. But I think it is much more important that if you want to be flourish your life, one of the things you need to do is start to notice what inspires you and nourishes you humanly, and actually quite consciously giving that time. Otherwise, as you get older with more responsibilities, that falls off your to-do list. And you just do your emails instead. That's what I'm in danger of, is just doing my emails instead. So that was one thing I wanted to emphasise from this week. Was there anything else I was going to emphasise? Oh yes, there was. Well, I thought there was one more thing. So the other thing I talk about in this chapter, I talk about lots of stuff in this chapter, I can't talk about it all here, is friendship. So one of the things I want to recommend is that you start thinking about your life in terms of your friendships. If you really want to flourish as a human being, that'll be very much to do with your relationships with people, particularly your friendships. Friendships in the West have become more and more downgraded. If you read someone like Samuel Johnson, he talks incredibly effusively about his friends. But nowadays, friendship has got more and more of a trivial matter, something to fit in between relationships sometimes. You know, whether you've had friends where, as soon as they're in a relationship, they disappear, then suddenly they want to meet up again, and then they disappear again. It's quite easy to do that with friends. So part of positive emotion means developing friendships, genuine friendships, and then deepening those friendships. I've written a whole book about friendship, so I can't bear to say very much about it, because, again, it's not a theory, it's just, you know what friends are, you've had friends, how about you give them more time, how about you try and deepen that thing called friendship? What are you not saying to your friend? Mostly it's a question, are you not spending enough time with friends, usually? So see if you can give some more time to friendship. Okay, so those are the things. I'd like you to be doing this week is carry on with your 5 gratitudes every night, if you can. It's really worth doing that. See if you can find some point in the day to write them down. What will start to happen is you'll start to notice more things you feel grateful for. Yeah? Really worth doing that. See if you can carry on doing a generous thing every day. People in my group were saying they weren't sure whether they were doing an extra thing or not. They were still, couldn't really tell. Doesn't really matter. Just see if you can have a bit of a sense of, I'm trying to be a bit more generous this week. If you'd like to, either make a date to, if you've done your life story, make those people again and do a rejoicing in merit at some point. Or just start rejoicing in people a bit more. And see if you can give a bit more time to friendship. I mean, that's a lot to do, so have a bit of a think about what you can do. And of course, you've still got the breathing, because you're still trying to practice integration, so you've still got your breathing space, and etc. And then the other thing I'm suggesting in the book is a particular approach to meditation. In a way, what I'd want to recommend is that the main things you start to get really built into your life is regularly coming along to this kind of grouping where you're with like-minded people, for all the reasons I've said, meditating every day, and going on a retreat. At the end of the book somewhere I say that actually those are the three main things to have. If you don't go on a retreat, it's very, very difficult to have a sense of what the value of all this is. It's all a bit notional because you've just come from work. If you don't keep putting yourself in these kind of conditions, like a lot of people tell me, this is the only place they meditate, or the only place they feel they can meditate. And that's just to do with the atmosphere here. But do try and set up your daily meditation practice. So those are the three real things I want to emphasise. Those are the important things. So see what you can do from what I've just said. Let's go back together in pairs or whatever, and pairs or threes, and try and decide what you're going to do based on what you did last week. So if you didn't meditate last week, try and meditate once or twice next week. But when are you going to do it? So say, okay, I will do it on Saturday and Sunday, or I will do it, I was saying to somebody at the break who's not on the course that people in on death row apparently say they don't have time to meditate. So it's just what everybody thinks is, yeah, it's really, really good, but I don't have time to do it. So if you didn't do it last week, see if you can do it twice this week. If you did it twice last week, see if you can do it three times. How can you actually start to build those steps and then really decide to come back and report in those things next week? Yeah? So we're still doing this positive emotion thing. How are you going to do it so that you can say whether you did it next week?